Via remote, this is BOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Prime Minister Hassan Diab declared Wednesday a day of mourning in Lebanon after a powerful blast devastated the port in the capital city of Beirut, killing at least 73 people and injuring more than 3,700. Officials said they expected the official casualty figures to rise as crews worked through the way the rubble of damaged buildings and people searched for missing family and friends. The exact cause of Tuesday's blast was not clear, but Lebanese officials put the focus on what they said was tons of ammonium nitrate that had been stored at port warehouses for the past 6 years. Lebanese President Michel Aoun, who called on an emergency cabinet meeting Wednesday, said those accountable would face the most severe penalties. French President Emmanuel Macron said France was sending the government personnel along with emergency doctors and tons of medical equipment to Lebanon to help with recovery efforts. The United Nations also said it was helping with the response and remains committed to supporting Lebanon at this difficult time. And U.S. President Donald Trump told reporters at the White House that the United States stands ready to assist Lebanon. White House officials and top congressional Democrats plan to meet again Wednesday to work out an agreement on a new coronavirus aid package by the end of the week. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said after 90 minutes of negotiations Tuesday that the goal was to finalize the proposal in the coming days in order to allow for a vote in Congress next week. Two sides have been divided by the size of the proposed aid packages, Democrats calling for $3.4 trillion in new spending. Republicans want to limit it to $1 trillion. For more news, join us at our website, voanews.com, with the VOA mobile app via remote. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization says there has been a threefold rise in the number of cases of COVID-19 among young people over the last 5 months. World Health Organization blaming the jump on a lack of attention to social distancing. Health experts say young people tend to be less likely to wear masks and social distance. They are also more likely to go to jobs, to beaches and bars, or shopping. The U.S., France, Germany, Spain, Japan, among the countries reporting the largest growth in infections among young people. Officials in Tokyo have said they plan to carry out coronavirus testing in the city's entertainment district, where many young people gather. They are also asking nightclubs to ensure partygoers have plenty of space. Honduras announced on Tuesday will reopen its airports to domestic flights next week and international flights the following week, August 17th. Airports in the Central American country have been closed since March. The coronavirus has brought the struggling Honduran economy to a near crawl. Government hopes that allowing more travel and tourism will give it a boost. The storm that hit the United States as Hurricane Isaias and killed 6 people has brought heavy winds and rain up the East Coast, expected to dissipate late Wednesday or early Thursday over southeastern Canada. The U.S. National Weather Service said the storm weakened to a post-tropical cyclone late Tuesday. Forecasters expect the storm to bring about 2 to 7 centimeters of rain to southeastern Canada while its winds continue to die down. Isaias came ashore in Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina, Monday night. Its Category 1 hurricane quickly moved up the east coast of the U.S., losing some force as it drifted inland, but leaving behind floods, downed trees, and extensive power outages. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has appealed for national unity against what he called evil and dark forces. In a televised address, the president blamed opposition groups whom he described as terrorists working with outsiders for destabilizing Zimbabwe's economy. And Yemen health authorities say 17 people, including 8 children, were killed in flash flooding and by lightning in Yemen's northern region. The fierce storms have added to misery of the war-torn country, which the UN has described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. 5 years of conflict has left large parts of the country in ruins. For more news, join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app via remote. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. Today is Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in this week for James Butte. We have a great show for you lined up, so do not reduce the volume. Here are the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's president lashes out amid accusations of corruption and abuse.
We will overcome attempts at destabilization of our society by a few rogue Zimbabweans acting in league with foreign detractors.
That was Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking Tuesday. Also ahead, South Africans condemn the crackdown on dissent in Zimbabwe, an interview with a Zimbabwean activist in Harare, a Ugandan opposition leader says COVID-19 public health measures are being used to suppress political campaigns, COVID-19 restrictions in Kenya are preventing cancer patients from receiving treatment, and a journalist in Benin has sparked a nationwide debate on sexual harassment.
After my denunciation, I observed that 3 out of 5 women were harassed in the workplace.
That was Benin journalist Angela Peja. All those stories are next on Daybreak Africa. Our top story today is in Zimbabwe. On Tuesday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa appealed for national unity against what he called, quote, evil and dark forces, end quote. In a televised address Tuesday, the president blamed opposition groups who he described as, quote, terrorists, end quote, working with outsiders for destabilizing Zimbabwe's economy. The comments come days after he ordered troops to stop anti-government protests over poverty and corruption. Since then, dozens have been arrested, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights organization said. For more on President Mnangagwa's speech, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
In a surprise address broadcast from the State House, President Emmerson Mnangagwa called for unity and patience among Zimbabweans as he deals with the detractors who he said are derailing his efforts to turn around the economy, which has struggled for more than 2 decades. He said opposition elements, economic sanctions, cyclones, drought, and most recently the deadly COVID-19 pandemic were affecting progress toward Zimbabwe's economic recovery.
Added to this is economic aggression, local currency manipulation, and detractors who fear the inevitable imminent success of our reforms. Although our progress has been slowed down, rest assured that we shall achieve our objectives. We will overcome. We will defeat the attack and stop the bleeding of our economy. We will overcome attempts at destabilization of our society by a few rogue Zimbabweans acting in league with foreign detractors. Those who promote hate and disharmony will never win.
Alexander Lucero is a former international relations and security studies lecturer at Harare Polytechnic College. He says Mnangagwa was ill-advised to address the nation Tuesday.
It was ill-timely given the circumstances at hand. It looks as if the president was bulking to pressure following the surprise trending of the hashtag Zimbabwe Lives Matter, which has seen almost all people on social media converge at a global level, raising concern of human rights abuses. So there was really nothing to take away from that State of the Nation address because there was absolutely nothing to look into.
Makomborere Haruzivese is one of 14 political activists wanted by police in connection with anti-government protests that were planned for last Friday, but stopped by heavy police and army presence in the streets of Harare. Speaking to VOA via phone from an undisclosed location, he noted that Mnangagwa's speech was silent on gross human rights abuses and corruption in Zimbabwe.
It's only seeing shadows. He just was sweeping, sleeping on top of the critical issues. Issues to do with accountability and transparency. But we will not allow Emmerson Mnangagwa to use the coronavirus pandemic to quarantine our rights, to quarantine our future, to quarantine our freedom. That will never happen. Peace unites Zimbabweans. Development unites Zimbabweans.
Haruzivese accused the president of subverting the constitution and said activists who continue to tweet hashtag Zimbabwean Lives Matter to, in his words, reclaim the democratic space which has been lost under Mnangagwa's rule. Upon taking power with the help of the military in 2017, Mnangagwa said he would not rule the country with an iron fist like former President Robert Mugabe. But his critics say he seems to be sliding into the dictatorship of his predecessor. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
The crackdown in Zimbabwe has sparked international outcry. In neighboring South Africa, activists and politicians have been speaking out, as Tuso Komalo reports from Johannesburg.
Tulu Madonsela, who is respected for her passion in fighting for the disadvantaged during her tenure as public protector, says there are no excuses for human rights abuses being committed by the government of Zimbabwe.
I just find it strange and quite frankly unacceptable that by simply voicing disagreement with the way government does things, people have to be arrested and then it will take a court of law to decide whether they're guilty or not. That's not what the rule of law requires. This is intimidation.
Julius Malema, the leader of South Africa's third largest political party, wants the Zimbabwean embassy in South Africa shut until authorities stop the crackdown amid concerns that it is getting worse. And former Democratic Alliance Party leader Musi Maimane has also called on the African continent to speak out against the abuses. He wants those committing criminal acts to be brought to book. Amnesty International has also weighed in. Muleya Mwananyanda is deputy director at the group's Southern Africa office.
Things really do need to change. The abductions need to change. The arrests need to change. The torture needs to stop happening. The sexual assaults on women need to stop happening. None of those things have been accounted for right now. And Zimbabweans are crying out to the region to come in and address some of the issues that Zimbabweans have been raising for years and years.
Zimbabwean activists and political parties are also piling pressure on President Ramaphosa to intervene. Mxolisi Ncube, the spokesperson of Zimbabwe's new political party, the Patriotic Front Party, is urging South Africa to stop its quiet diplomacy and intervene before it's too late.
South Africa is one of the countries bearing the brunt of what is happening, especially the political and economic crisis in Zimbabwe, should be at the forefront of trying to resolve these issues because it's hosting around 3 million Zimbabweans in an estimated level. We appeal to him to rally the whole of the African continent behind the people of Zimbabwe and what they are crying for.
Till now, South Africa has not uttered a word on the abuses. Tuso Komalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
For more on the clampdown in Zimbabwe, on Tuesday evening, I spoke to Promise Kwananzi. Kwananzi is an activist in Harare. He told me that despite President Mnangagwa's speech, he and his fellow activists are not backing down.
Well, the mood is that of defiance, peaceful defiance, because we believe that our cause is just and legitimate. Our cause is peaceful and nonviolent. Our cause is a citizen's cause. Our cause is an apolitical cause.
Kwananzi dismissed the president's threat to, quote, flush out, end quote, those who are against him, and describes the president's speech as, quote, hurried and senseless, end quote.
It's expected of him. He historically, if you look at the roles he has played, the things he has done to this country, it's all negative, it's all violence, it's all, you know, enforcement kind of thing. He said nothing really substantive in response to the calls by the people of Zimbabwe.
Kwananzi took particular aim at the president's claims that Zimbabwe's economic woes were due to opposition groups, sanctions, COVID-19, currency manipulation, and other issues.
We believe that corruption is the root cause of our poverty. We believe that corruption is the root cause of the economic decline that we have seen Zimbabwe go through for the last 20 or so years. They may blame sanctions, they may blame the opposition, they may blame this and that. But I think that the leakages from the corruption, the level of corruption in this country is enormous.
Kwananzi alleged that there is widespread abuse of human rights in Zimbabwe.
It is a basic democratic right that Zimbabweans must be able to protest when they feel dismayed about something. The response of the government was disproportionate to the peaceful, non-violent protests that were shaping up. And thousands have been denied their right to movement. In a normal democratic society, you would expect that the government would actually reward people who whistleblow against corruption. But in this country, if you whistleblow against corruption, you're arrested.
Kwananzi said activists like himself are trying to lay low while continuing their organizing so as not to be found by authorities. In addition to arrests, there are reports of protest organizers being abducted and tortured.
Yes, there are so many comrades, there are so many cadres and activists who remain unaccounted for. As you know, movement has been curtailed severely. We are unable to move, so it's very difficult to account for each and every activist. We have really not yet been in a position to reconcile the numbers, so to speak. But I can tell you without equivocation that hundreds of activists are currently in distress in one way or the other.
He added that activists in Zimbabwe have seen and appreciate international support for their cause.
We greatly appreciate the solidarity that has poured in from all four corners of the world, from Africa, from America, from Europe. We are indebted to all the progressive forces across the world who realize that an injury to one is an injury to all. That is the world we envisage to live in, a global village in which citizens, what we call people-to-people solidarity, become the cornerstone of our democratic aspirations the world over. And we say that please continue to support us. We owe it to them. Whenever they will be distressed, we will be there for them as well.
That was Promise Kwananzi, a Zimbabwean activist in Harare. In Uganda, an opposition politician has accused the government of President Yoweri Museveni of using COVID-19 restrictions to stifle political activities in the country. Robert Chagulanyi, also known by his stage name Bobby Wine, says opposition leaders are denied a chance to meet while those in the ruling NRM party are allowed to hold campaign gatherings. Reporter Mugume Davis Rakaringe has more from Kampala.
Ugandan opposition figure Robert Chagulanyi told his supporters in Kampala this Monday that we fight for freedom of association and expression despite COVID-19 restrictions. The leader of a newly formed opposition party called it, in two quotes, double standards to restrict opposition politicians while accusing those in the ruling NRM party of freely holding public meetings.
You've all seen that NRM candidates are going around undisturbed with their campaigns. They've gone ahead to stage rallies and meetings, but whenever our people come together, they are attacked by the police. We condemn that.
Speaking in local dialect, Uganda, Chagulanyi said people should disregard the means of health guidelines.
I want to encourage you, my people, that you should not be deceived. You should not be deceived by those regulations. If someone puts regulations that he or she does not respect, then those regulations become irrelevant.
According to Minister of Health guidelines, gatherings for more than five people are banned, while public gatherings with special permission should not exceed 30 people. The measures introduced in March also include banning and restricting public gatherings and previously movement. The Uganda Transition Scenarios Thought Leadership Group, a civil society organization in Uganda, said in a report in May that government measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19, though lawful, have also impacted civic freedoms. Rogers Morindwa, the spokesperson for the ruling NRM party, denies members from his party are conducting public rallies and meetings. He says both the opposition and the ruling party must obey laws put in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
This is the government, and the government has guided us on how best we can control the faster spread of COVID-19. As a party, we want to see the ground level for everybody. That's our position as NRM.
Crispin Kaheru, a civil society activist, says opposition leaders like Chagurani make a valid point. He says the government should implement COVID-19 preventive measures without bias.
Opposition politicians are being arrested and blocked from doing the very things ministers and other ruling party politicians are doing. In the face of a very dangerous pandemic like COVID, it is important that those in charge of managing its containment are above board in adhering to the health guidelines that they've set themselves.
Emmanuel Inebiona is the Minister of Health spokesperson. He says politicians across the political divide must respect the guidelines as they seek for votes.
My appeal is to everyone to know that the disease is still with us, and we must ensure that this political season does not become a catalyst to further the spread of COVID-19.
He added that schools, places of worship, as well as cultural gatherings must also remain closed in the country. Uganda has recorded over 1,100 cases of COVID-19 with a handful of recorded deaths. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is suspending the value-added tax exemption on imports by mining companies in an effort to bolster state revenue, the budget minister said. The budget minister told the finance minister to implement the government's decision to suspend the VAT exemption after the cabinet agreed to the move last week. That's according to a letter seen by Reuters news agency on Tuesday. Congo is Africa's top copper producer. The country had exempted mining companies from paying VAT on imports since 2016 to help them during a commodity price downturn. Louis Watum, president of Congo's Chamber of Mines, said mining firms had not been consulted before the government agreed to reimpose the tax, a move he said would hit cash flow. Congo's economy has been hit by lowered demand for copper during the coronavirus outbreak and is forecast to contract by 2.4% this year. In Kenya, doctors say cancer patients are struggling to access treatment due to restrictions to control COVID-19. So far, Kenya has more than 22,000 COVID-19 cases and has reported about 370 deaths. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
39-year-old Margaret Mwangi is a mother of a 16-year-old cancer patient who has had recurrent brain tumors since he was four. Through the years, he's lost his eyesight and had to drop out of school. These days, the mother says she's worried he won't get the care he needs because so many resources are going toward treating COVID-19 patients.
I am very worried, as I do not know if he will wake up tomorrow. I am worried about his future. When one goes to hospital, the doctors only seem to majorly concentrate with COVID-19 patients. We feel neglected.
Advocates say the pandemic is taking its toll on many cancer patients in Kenya. Lockdowns to combat the spread of the coronavirus have, according to some doctors, limited access to cancer facilities. Catherine Wichira chairs the NGO, Kenya Network of Cancer Organizations.
A large number of the oncologists we have in Kenya today are based in Nairobi. What this means is that patients from all over Kenya will have to come all the way to Nairobi to see these oncologists. With the lockdown measures in place due to the COVID-19 crisis, it becomes a challenge.
Wachira notes that social distancing measures due to the pandemic limit how many patients are allowed in hospitals. Many patients have also lost their jobs.
With the loss of income, they are not able not only just not to buy their drugs, but also to get proper nutrition. Now, when a patient is undergoing chemotherapy or radiotherapy, it is quite crucial and quite vital that their nutritional needs are well met.
That's what happened to Mwangi. She earned $5 a day from a grocery business, which failed due to the recent economic downturn. Now she's trying to make ends meet by weaving table mats, but sales are slow. At Nairobi Hospital, Gladwell Kiori, an oncologist, says some patients don't go to the hospital at all because they're afraid of contracting the virus.
That has also limited access to cancer treatment and diagnostics. Routine screening of mammograms and pap smears has also gone down because of this fear.
Nairobi Hospital is one of the leading private facilities that treats cancer patients in a country that has a shortage of specialists. Currently, doctors here say there are only 30 medical, surgical, and radiation oncologists in all of Kenya, making the ratio of patients per cancer specialist about 1 to 5,000. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
When journalist Angela Peja in Benin announced on Facebook that she was, quote, tired of sexual harassment in the workplace, her post went viral. Now she's encouraging other women to come forward and help fight the problem. VOA's Gabby Dossiel reports.
Angela Peja, a health journalist from Benin's national television station, ORTB, set off a national dialogue with a Facebook post in May. She wrote, "Sexual harassment in the workplace, even in this day and age, is still tolerated, leading to humiliation of all kinds and lower self-esteem, rape, sexual harassment, and mental abuse. I am tired of it." So she started a web-based association called Don't Be Afraid that serves as an online support group.
After my denunciation, I observed that 3 out of 5 women were harassed in the workplace. Don't Be Afraid is a nonprofit association that would like to be a listening center for all these people. All these girls who are harassed in professional and student environments, to provide them with psychological and legal support as well.
The association's Facebook and Twitter pages are gaining followers. The outlet is giving internet users a place to express themselves, to challenge social pressures, and to bear witness. Women leaders say the pages are sparking a conversation. Mariette Moncho from the West African Network of Young Women Leaders.
The young girl in African society, at least in Benin, is for the most part afraid of social pressure, afraid of what will be said. I already find it beneficial that there is this movement, not to be afraid. We must pray that it does not run out of steam, that it does not die, that it continues over time.
Advocates for women's rights, like Innocencia Dwedigbe from Refunga, Benin, have been delighted by Angela Peja's speech and its positive consequences.
Even if it's no longer zero harassment, we're sure the rate will go down. Angela's denunciation must change something and will change something. In the professional environment, the situation has already changed.
In early May, after meeting with Peja, President Patrice Talon condemned sexual harassment. During a work session with public media officials and some members of his administration, Talon announced plans to improve the working environment for women and to create ways to report misconduct without fear of reprisal. For Xavier Fagbouan in Cotonou, I'm Gabi Dorsil in Washington.
That's it for this Wednesday, August 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of Managing Editor James Butte, I'm Jason Patingin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clote, host of VOA's Africa Weekend Show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.